Welcome to Spark Your Fire Podcast, sparking your interest in Australian property and finance. Here's your hosts, Jazz and David.
G'day everyone, welcome back to another episode of Spark Your Fire. I'm your host, David Shee, and today with me is our lovely host in Melbourne, as always, Jazz Dana. How are you doing there, mate?
I'm really good, David. enjoying the work from home environment with the virus.
Don't we all? And I think that's why it's even more important to be able to see each other. And I think as a change today, we've actually started recording this as a video. But don't get our listeners excited. We're not going to share our video. We're just for testing purposes. But anyway, if that works out quite well moving forward, we will definitely include a video in our recording as well. But I guess, in today's environment, I think it's very, very confusing in terms of what's currently with property market. And I know a lot of people are confused and asking both you and me, hey, you know, should we be looking at buying? Should we just put on hold? Or, you know, what really should we be looking at doing in the current environment, right? Because there's so many mixed messages. And I thought, you know, this is a great opportunity to bring someone who's an authority in this area. Obviously he's had about 40 years experiences in the property industry as far as my recording, and I've also read one of his books, which is Investing Principles. So without any further delay, I just thought let's get Michael Yarny from Metropole onto the show. Michael, welcome.
Thanks, David. Thanks, Jess.
Yeah, welcome to the show. And I think, you know, that's why, with your experience and with you being such a public figure in this property industry, and I know a lot of people definitely look at and subscribe to your blog, propertyupdates.com.au, which is fantastic, by the way, got lots of information. We want to pick your brain a little bit about the current market, where it's heading, you know, what's going to happen and all that. But just before we start, I guess for those people who probably haven't heard of you, and I say that's probably a minority, could you give us a brief summary of, you know, what your story is like?
Sure. Well, the benefit of having been invested in property since the early 1970s, so it's even longer than you said, David, is that I've actually got a level of perspective. So I've lived through, I think the first depression was actually in the 1980s. I don't remember that too well, but we got through that. And then I lived through the stock market crash of 1987, and I got through that. And then there was a recession we had to have in the 1990s, and I always most went broke. A couple of my business partners in development went bankrupt, but I got through that. And then there's been SARS and the Asian bird flu and the global financial crisis and wars and multiple prime ministers and high interest rates and low interest rates and removal of negative gearing and reintroduction of negative gearing and introduction of GST. And David, I got through that. And so we are going to get through what we're getting through now. And having lived through that, it gives one a much different perspective, because to live through the challenging times we have at the moment, you actually need a long-term perspective. But a lot of people are making decisions based on the 30-year decisions based on the last 30 minutes of news, and that's not a good way to do things.
If you're in the market, you've got to be in the market from a long-term perspective is the key point. But the beauty is that having you on the show, that you have been through all these different crises that we have seen, I really wanted to pick your brain on the macro environment currently with the experience that you have. What does this one relate to closely? Is it more like 1930s? Is it 9/11 baked into 2008?
Hey, I'm not that old. I don't remember the 1930s. Well, interestingly, I don't think we've ever experienced an invader that doesn't need a visa, that can travel to any country it likes, and that affects the rich and the poor, the young. Yes, it's even affecting the young, not as much, and the old. And on that basis, it's actually brought the world together. It's a bit surreal. It's a bit like those movies, War of the Worlds, where we're all being attacked by an alien, and eventually I think it was an Orson Welles movie or something like that, but we're eventually going to get through it all. So, yes, there are lessons one can take from the past, but they're not exact parallels. But I guess the lessons you can take are this, the way people think. So currently there's some people who are thinking in the short term and others who take a long-term view. There's people who are currently thinking that it's the end of the world. while other people are seeing it's a time of resurgence, a time of regrowth, a time of renewal, a time of change. So every downturn, every recession I have been involved in has had, unfortunately, some people going by the wayside. Now, let's be clear. I'm not belittling the health issues. So we're talking today about the economic issues, not the health issues, because we're not qualified to do that. And unfortunately, we will all be touched by it. We are already financially, and hopefully not many of us health-wise. But the bottom line is, if we can today talk about the economic side of things, and in particular the property side, which I guess your listeners are interested in, what we've got to remember is that once we get over this, just like all those other things that I've lived through and others who are a bit older than you have lived through, it will be a blip in history. So I don't think in 5 years' time, in fact, probably not in 3 years' time, and definitely not in 10 years' time, it's going to make a difference to the value of your or my house, your or my property. But in the short term, it will. And so we've actually got to get through that. And it's a time that we're going to set ourselves up for the next stage. Because while there's a lot of uncertainty, there are a number of certainties. Can I share some with you?
Yeah, go for it.
Absolutely.
Well, we're recording this in April 2020. I can assure you that in 12 months' time, we're going to be in April 2021. That's certain. And I can tell you that whether it's April 2021 or April 2022, it's going to be gone. And I can also tell you that somewhere between now and then, there's going to be a, let's call it a survivor line, where we're actually going to move on. But up till then, some people are nervous, others are bunkering down, but there's going to be a point where, and it could be sooner than rather than we think, where we're actually going to be able to desire is going to overtake fear. So at the moment, fear is affecting a lot of people. But as the market eventually moves, when there's less COVID cases happening, when we're allowed out again, the underlying fundamentals are going to drive us. And those people who set themselves up in this stage, for once we cross that survival line, those who currently are getting their finances in order, are getting the right ownership structures, making sure they've got good protection with the buffers, financial buffers to see them through, they're the ones who are going to be set up. We're talking about property with regard to businesses. Other people are going to get themselves set so that when the opportunities come, and they always do, they're going to be ready to take advantage of them. Not take advantage of people, but of the opportunities.
Right. So that's a fair point, Michael. It's about setting yourself up for the opportunities that are going to show up. But I think the important thing that for the listeners that I want to pick your brain on is, how do you know that this is the time now for the people who are cashed up or have got finances in place? How do you know what is the time to get back into the market to pick the right deals and make the max potential out of it?
You want to get right down to the nitty gritty straight away, don't you? You want the gold.
He's a very direct guy.
That's how the game works.
Okay. So the answer is you will never know, just like you never knew anyway. So interestingly, none of the economists got it right 12 months ago. Think about what we were worried about 12 months ago. 12 months ago, it was before the election. People were worried negative gearing was going to go, capital gains tax was going to change, the market was going to crash. All the economists got it wrong. So I actually don't make forecasts. I've found by making forecasts, I don't invest as well. So I have an expectation that the property market's going to pick up. I don't know when that is, but I expect it to. I have an expectation that interest rates are going to go up again one day. I don't know when it is. I don't think it's going to be for 3 years, but I know it's going to happen. I have an expectation that many of my investments are going to perform well, but some won't work as well. And I don't know which ones they are. Now, interestingly, that's not a cop-out. By investing that way, it actually helps me prepare for the upside, and also it actually helps me minimise my downside. So rather than forecasting and trying to get it right, so I know the property market is going to pick up, but I'm not saying it's going to pick up in February 2021. That's a forecast. But if I invest knowing that over the long term things are going to be good, and in the long term I'm going to need to have the finance to see me through, and I'm going to have to own it in the right structures, I'm not going to make short-term decisions, as I said a moment ago, long-term decisions based on short-term factors, because I can't get it right. None of the other economists can. So will the property markets fall further? And the question is, should you buy now or not? At Metropole, we don't sell property. We're Australia's largest buyer's agency. And even in the last week, we've been actually very busy because we've got two groups of clients. These people who, and you know, being in the finance business, people who are always looking for reasons not to get involved, and now all of a sudden they've got a fantastic reason not to. And then there's a whole lot of people who've got a long-term perspective who basically realise, hey, look, I can buy something better today, cheaper today than I could 3-4 months ago, because 2 months ago, because there isn't as much competition. And as long as it's an A-grade home, if it's a new home for themselves, or an investment-grade property with a twist, something special, and at a bit of a discount, I don't know if I'm going to get the bottom or not, but if I find something that's pretty good, I know that in 6 months' time and 12 months' time, I won't be able to get it at the price I pay today. So don't try and pick the bottom. But this is the time when investment-grade properties are not going to fall much. The experience from the GFC, the experience from other downturns, is that different markets will perform differently. So to answer your question in a long-winded way, the upper end of the market's going to suffer. The high end of the luxury properties always suffer when the stock market crashes, when businesses are not as stable. I also believe this time around the lower end properties, blue-collar worker areas, young house and land packages, and the outer suburbs aren't going to do well because, in general, a lot of those people have borrowed to the hilt to get into the property market, and they're not going to have the job security and the income. But there's a lot of people still employed and who've got good jobs and living in the more established areas. So I think that A-grade homes and investment-grade properties are probably going to drop 5%. That's the sort of example we've seen before. B-grade properties are probably going to drop 10% or could be even a bit more than that. And secondary properties, C-grade properties, they could easily drop 20% and, in fact, not even have anyone buying them.
So can I just jump in? What's your definition of A grade, B grade, and C grade? Because I think that for everyone, that's probably a different definition, right?
Yes.
What would be your definition?
So basically, if you're talking about a home, that's very different to an investment property. But to me, most properties on the market, even in good times, are not investment grade properties. And the reason I say that is because most investors fail. Most investors, the statistics show there's 2.5 million property investors in Australia. 1.9 own one or two properties. 1.9 million, I should say, own one or two properties. So they've never going to get the financial desire results they want, which means that they failed. There's 23,000, according to the tax department, properties who own six or more properties. 23,000 investors, I should say, own six or more properties. Interestingly, a lot of those don't even own good properties. They own dud properties and secondary locations. So the intention is to grow an asset base. And I know there's lots of arguments, cash flow, capital growth, but in my mind, there's no choice. You need cash flow to keep you through the system, but you need capital growth to get you out. So to answer your question, what's an investment-grade property? One that actually helps you build an asset base. See, David, I don't know what's going to happen when you retire. You're a different age to me and a different age to Jazz. So are they going to allow negative gearing then or not? Are you going to be able to borrow on your super or not? Are you going to have to pay capital gains tax? Is the government going to give you a pension? No idea. What I do know is that if you have an asset base, you'll have choices. And if you don't, you won't. So your job, every investor's job between now and then, is to build themselves a big asset base. So an investment-grade property is one that outperforms the averages with regard to capital growth, that has wealth-producing rates of return. And in my mind, it's actually got owner-occupier appeal because it's owner-occupiers who drive the market. So not investment stock, not the things that are bought off the plan or new or house and land packages or regional Australia. Don't fight the big trends. The big trends are jobs growth, economic growth, going to create jobs growth, going to create population growth, and you're looking for more affluent areas where people can afford to and are prepared to buy properties, owner-occupiers, aspirational areas, gentrifying areas. So to me, we do a top-down approach. We look at only the capital cities. We don't invest in regional area. Why? Don't need to fight the trends. Yeah, there's growth in some of those areas, but why fight the big trends? Then only currently for the last 5 years in the big three capital cities, Melbourne, Sydney, Brisbane. And then only in certain suburbs in those areas. We've got 40-year statistics on every suburb in Australia based on houses, apartments, townhouses. So you find the areas that are going to outperform the averages, and one's going through gentrification, and then within those areas, the right location, and within those locations, the right property, and the properties are going to have owner-occupier appeal, have a high-ish land-to-asset ratio because it's the land that appreciates. That doesn't mean it's going to be a house. An apartment in a great location is still going to be a great investment. It's going to have a high land-to-asset ratio. It's going to, in my mind, have a twist, something special, something unique, something different about it, so that if it becomes vacant or if you have to sell it, it'll be stand out from the pack. And I like properties to which you can add value through renovations or development. So it's not only the market pushing you up, but actually you manufacture your own capital growth as well.
Basically, buying properties that have got the X factor into them is what you're talking about, Michael.
Well, yes, and for double garage rather than a single garage, good balconies. I mean, I'm assuming you've already got the basics. You've got a good floor plan, you've got a good location, but what I'm saying is it's got to have something different so it stands out from the rest. Sometimes it's water views, city views, usable courtyard, usable balconies, something different. So when people go to rent it as a tenant or a valuer comes to value it, they'll say, yeah. Yeah, that would, if I had to, the value would say, well, you know, the bank's secure with that.
Mm-hmm. All right. So with the current market turmoil that we are in, where the unemployment rate is shooting up, and we know that it's 10% is kind of on the cards, and maybe even more, who knows, right? According to you, and correct me if I'm wrong, if you are buying the properties in the right area, right kind of property, with the right appeal of it, it even now is the time to buy. You shouldn't be waiting for it.
No, if you've got the right finance, if you've got security in your job, and if you've got the right ownership structures, you've all worked it out, it's possible that the properties you're looking for may go down 5% or so. Having said that, if we're going to have a short, sharp downturn, as most economists are predicting, and once the lockup gets loosened, what's going to happen is there's going to be a pent-up demand. Because there's two sorts of people in the market. There's discretionary purchasers and non-discretionary. Discretionary ones, they're on strike. They're not buying at the moment. They're sitting back. You don't need to upgrade your home. You don't need to downgrade your home. But there's currently people who've sold a couple of months ago and have to buy. And there's currently people who bought a month ago and now have to sell. And so on that basis, there will be transactions occurring. And now's the time to actually negotiate hard, negotiate well, because there are fewer people around. And so you can, if you find the right property, get it at a better price than you could a month ago. See, definitely 2 months ago. Because remember, when we started off this year, everyone was predicting double-digit growth for Melbourne and Sydney. Melbourne and Sydney have had the biggest rebounds they've had in a long, long, well, ever on record. And we were heading for very strong capital growth in property for most of, the next couple of years. Now, that's going to go. So when the rebound occurs again, when the market opens up again, what will be missing is consumer confidence. So some people will sit on the sidelines, but there will be lots of people who still have to, because people are getting married, they're getting divorced, they're having babies, hopefully not in that order, people are having jobs, they're moving around. So there are still going to be transactions. The number of transactions will probably halve, but similarly the number of properties on the market will go down considerably as well. Maybe I can give you a different example. Every Christmas, for 4 or 5 weeks, the property market closes down. So conveyancers go on holidays, mortgage brokers go on holidays, the banks sort of close down, solicitors do, estate agents do. So the transactions almost stop. But when we come back, the market hasn't tanked. It goes on again.
It's like a pause, isn't it?
So the fundamentals are growing demand, not as much, because what part of the demand is coming from population growth and part of that's coming from immigration, and that'll be decreased for a short while, but the doors will open up again because people are going to see Australia as a safe haven. And yes, some people are going to have difficulty getting finance because they're not going to have jobs or they're going to be in certain industries. So how long it goes on for, how deep the downturn goes on for, will really be related to how soon we get over this and how much damage there's been done to the economy. And currently the government's hell-bent in protecting the economy and building a bridge moving forward. So I'm not necessarily saying buy now. I'm saying get set for the to be ready for when we cross that survival line that I talked about, or if it's a special property, one. Well, a really good example is there was somebody, a solicitor I was speaking to, one of our clients, who was looking for a property in Sydney and asked exactly this question, should I wait? But interestingly, Donna, one of our buyer's agents, found him a fantastic property with water views in Coogee, actually not water glimpses. I saw, I didn't see the property, but I saw from the photos that, in fact, on his balcony, he could see the water. That's that twist. That's that special thing. And he said, oh, yeah, but there's a whole lot of other properties in that building. Maybe I can get one cheaper in 6 months' time. And I said, are any others for sale? No. Have any others got that aspect where you've got the view? No. So if another one comes up, if this didn't have the water views, if that's always, that's something you can't build out, go for it. Get it now, because that won't be available in 6 months' time. So, yes, take advantage of the right opportunity for the right property, and he got it at a price, because that was going to go to auction, as most good properties in Sydney would, but the auction was called off, and vendor was nervous, and they were looking for probably, a couple of hundred, 80, 90,000 more than we actually ended up paying for it, is what they were initially looking for. Now, could he have maybe made another 10,000? Maybe, maybe not, I don't know. But in 10 years' time, he's going to look back and say, hey, I paid 1.18 for a two-bedroom apartment in Coogee with water views. It's worth $2 million today.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I got another question. I love property, Michael. I've been in this space, and so does David. We've been in this space for probably 10, 11 years now, not as big of experience as you do. But the older generations, or the generations in the past, basically, have been able to take advantage of property as a store of value, which appreciates over time. And my personal belief is one of the main driving factor for that was the interest rate environment, that every time there was a one way or the other, RBA or the government basically came and injected the economy by dropping the rates and then maybe increasing a little bit, but never went back to where they were, 17-18%. Slowly they came down, and now they're at a point where they're almost 0.25. I don't really count that, so I'll call it zero for now. The question is, for your generation, and maybe to some extent for our generation, if who came in early and bought some, it has done the job of acting as a good primary store of wealth to build the asset base, right? Now, the question becomes is, with the current rate environment and the debt cycle or the over-leveraging that we have got, people are already leveraged up to the hill. What is the future of the property like? Do we see in 10, 20, 10 years it's still doubling? If it's a good property, it's still doubling like it always used to? Or that is more of a thing of a past now?
Really good question, and it shows some insight. So what's actually happened is property values have, on average, doubled. So our statistics go back as far as the ABS statistics do, 40 years. So Melbourne was the best performing market, apartments and houses, on average growing 7.9% and 7.4%, houses 7.9% over the last 40 years. Not every year. So there were long periods where not there wasn't much growth. But on average, properties doubled in Melbourne every 10 years. Having said that, half didn't, because that's what an average is. Same with Sydney. Brisbane actually did a bit less than that, I think it was 6.8 or 6.7% growth, but for the last 10 years hasn't done much. So, again, lots of properties didn't double, so you can't just buy any property and hope it's going to double in value. Now, the next thing is, yes, part of the reason for the increase in value of properties was the lowering of interest rates making properties more affordable. And the fact that when I first started, there was usually only one breadwinner and then there were two. So, in fact, households earned more, and in the long term, they were able to borrow more because the money cost less. So how's it going to move going forward? And that's a good question. I think a number of other things are going to affect property as well moving forward, because part of what's allowed people to borrow is their jobs. And I can see, forget COVID, and that's messed up a lot of people's jobs, but between now and, I don't know, the rest of this decade, a lot of jobs are going to go through artificial intelligence and offshoring. So there's actually going to be fewer people doing more work, more efficiently in some ways, and a lot of the menial jobs are going to go. Now, I'm not belittling people's jobs, but there's a lot of studies showing that 30%, up to 30% of Australian jobs are going to be gone by 2030. That doesn't mean we're going to have 30% unemployment. Just like the car industry has redeployed, other jobs are going to come. But I'm suggesting that the gap between the wealthier people who are going to still have good jobs and the poorer people, now remember, poor Australians are still richer than most rich people in other countries, the gap's going to widen. And so therefore, I'd only be chasing the sort of properties that are going to be in continuous strong demand by those more affluent people, because I can see that a lot of people aren't going to be able to borrow more to buy properties. I also see a different finance environment, and you guys as finance brokers would know better than me. It's harder for beginners to get in than it used to be. It's harder for people already in the system to keep refinancing to grow their portfolio, and it's harder at the end to live off your portfolio because the banks not lending on equity like they used to before. So it is going to be a much harder environment, fully agree. But the question is, what are your options? Stock market? Well, we just know what that does. And it's nothing new. I mean, it had a big fall this time, but it's too volatile. And it's only now, just before all this, reached its peak of 10 years ago. So put your money in cash, you've really got no choice. So I believe that well-located properties, and we've talked about investment-grade properties before, are going to be underpinned by our growing population wanting to live in three main capital cities mainly and in the same areas in those capital cities, and the wealth of the nation. So over the long term, they're going to be the driving forces. So you've got to go where there's going to be increasing wealth, and it's not a judge of people. But the rich don't like to commute. They're not going to go into the outer suburbs. So the gap between the rich and the poor properties, the values of properties in the wealthier areas, the more affluent areas, is going to, compared to the outer suburbs, in my mind, is going to get bigger. So buy the best property you can. And remember, in an inflation rate of 1% or 2%, if you're borrowing at 3% or so, and most loans may even have a 2 in front of it. Again, you'd know better than me. And you're getting a rental return, probably not much more than having a 2 in front of it net after paying all outgoings. You're still going to be better off if you've got 4% or 5% capital growth, not 10% capital growth, because it's the combination of rental return and capital growth. And the cost of money's got a 2 in front of it. And leverage and time. But no, it's very likely that a lot of properties won't double in value in the next 10 years. But they don't need to if the value of your money isn't being eroded by inflation. Having said that, how are we going to pay off this huge debt that the government has taken on?
So that was my next question. I mean, so it's not like in the past just having a title and you automatically get an appreciation of 5-10%. That's not going to happen anymore. Yes, selective properties, very, very selective properties will still do well. Some we have already mentioned, right? The criteria for that. But at the same time, we are printing money like anything, whether it's here or it's in US or any other country, right?
Yeah.
So, which to some extent inflates the value of the asset, but it also causes inflation in your life in general, right?
So exactly right.
So it's a,
exactly. Yeah. If I could actually bring up one other point before we move on to that, because that's a really important point. You talked about the current debt we've got. Some people have overcommitted, no argument. But if you take into account all the properties in Australia, according to CoreLogic, they're worth $7 trillion. And if you take all the mortgage debt, residential mortgage debt, the average loan-to-value ratio of residential real estate in Australia is about 28%, because there's $1.8 trillion worth of mortgages out. So there's lots of people who've got no debt against their home at all. A lot of older people have got no debt against their home. A lot of people have got a small amount of debt. Others have got debt against appreciating assets, investments, and a lot of people have forward paid their mortgages because over the last couple of years, as interest rates have dropped, they've kept up their same payments. So this is not the question you're asking, but I didn't answer your previous one properly. The answer is that Australian real estate on the whole is not over leveraged. Are some people overcommitted? Definitely. But the next question, you're right, Jazz, is how's the government going to buy its way out of this? And I'm not an economist, even though I've been a student of economics for a long, long time. I believe it's going to create inflation. And what better asset to own in an inflationary environment than real estate? Because how's the government going to forgive its debt? I mean, at the moment, the Reserve Bank is buying all this new debt that the government is paying us out, and the Reserve Bank's undertaken to do that. But the left hand, the right hand is the same thing. So they're either going to have to keep this debt for a long time or create inflation so the debt is worth less in 10 years' time than it is today. And so I don't know which way it's going to play out, but it's very likely, you're right, we're going to have an inflationary environment, and so therefore the 1% or 2% inflation we're trying to get, we've got at the moment, will go. Interest rates will go up, but I don't mind if interest rates go up, because they're only going to go up when the market is doing well, when inflation is up, when unemployment is down. That's the only reason the Reserve Bank is going to raise interest rates.
Sorry to cut you in, but Michael, if the interest rates go up, people are leveraged to hell. How are they going to pay off their
mortgage? Well, you shouldn't let them, and why should they pay off their mortgage?
No, we don't. So just to be clear, we don't let them. It's the bank's assessment criteria in the past that has made it happen.
Okay. Having said that, if inflation occurs, the value of the property goes up, rents go up, their wages go up, and so therefore, let me give you a real example. My first investment property, I paid $18,000 for. I couldn't afford it. It was in Large Street, Caulfield, number 17 Large Street, South Caulfield. I still own it. Interestingly, I went house with my parents because I couldn't afford it. We took a 30-year loan. We put $1,000 each in and took $16,000 loan for 30 years. Had no idea how I was going to pay it off. And I got $12 a week rent, and I was excited. And then the Whitlam government came in and inflation went up and the property went up in value and the rent went up in value and increased in value so much I could borrow against it. So, yes, are some people going to get caught out with this? Yes. Unfortunately, some people don't understand the rules of property. Australia is not very fun. Australians in general are not very financially literate. And so they don't understand that they actually have to have money set aside for a rainy day and a financial buffer. But in my mind, Jazz, successful investors don't just buy property, they buy time. So therefore, they've got the time to allow the inflation to work. So they've got to not spend all their money, but have something. You're the finance experts in a redraw account, an offset account, and a line of credit to see them through the ups and downs. So our clients, at the moment, some are not getting rent, some are a bit nervous, but they've been set up not to have to lose out. They've got the financial buffers to see them through.
Okay, cool. This can continue, but I want to move on to the next chapter over here. Commercial real estate, do you see that changing much with this new concept of work from home? And that once it's over and we are done with, that people will actually be more inclined towards that. This system works. Why are we paying commercial rents? And that's going to impact the commercial market.
Right. So are we going to work differently, live differently moving forward? Very likely so. What's happened up to now, so I've got 60 staff amongst my three offices and they're all working from home. Up till now, only a small group of them did. You know what? It actually works. Part of the reason I think a lot of employers haven't allowed their employees to work from home is because they didn't, let's be blunt, trust them. But now they've actually realised, hey, it actually can work and has to work. So will some offices work in a different environment? Yes, but I've also found that people are concerned about this self-isolation. They're getting mental health issues and other things. So I think we are still social animals. So there's a number of elements of commercial real estate. There's offices, retail, shops, industrial. And so they all work differently. Currently, though, commercial real estate, which I have a large commercial portfolio, has been selling on crazy returns, 2 and 3%, because a lot of inexperienced investors have been buying commercial properties on residential yields. Commercial property is a cash flow investment, while in my mind, residential real estate is a high growth, relatively low yield investment. So another trend that may come out of this is people are going to have home studies. The one-bedroom apartment or the studio apartment won't be as popular as one with even if a study nook or a backyard that they can work from home. So there's some interesting trends are going to happen in residential and in commercial. Very much so. People are going to see, maybe I don't need 700 square metres of office space, I can get away with 500. As for retail, well, that was starting to die anyway. So it'll be really interesting who survives.
Fair enough. Mm. That's good. Do you see negative interest rates on the card?
I don't see how that would work in Australia. I know it's happened in Europe in a couple of places, but the Reserve Bank is lowering and keeping interest rates lower through quantitative easing. And I can't see a reason why at this point the government or banks would pay you to give them money. You'd pay the bank to give them money. So I can't envisage that happening in Australia. It's only happened in a couple of places overseas, and I'm not sure that it's actually worked too well.
Okay. Yeah, look, I think there's definitely some good tips there. And I think, Michael, just I guess before we wrap up, what are the three main tips that you have for first-time investors out of your 40-plus years of investing experience in the current environment?
First-time investors, okay. Well, you've got to remember that there's a number of stages to your investment career. The first one is education. So be careful who you listen to, because currently, well, as the new boom started the middle of last year, there's a whole lot of gurus out there and there's a whole lot of people on internet forums and other places that love to give advice but actually don't have a track record. So be careful who you listen to, but educate yourself. The next step is the saving stage. You've actually got to save by spending less than you earn. Understand the concept of delayed gratification. It's hard to save at the moment because you get very little on your savings, but get a deposit and get into the property market. The next stage is the asset growth stage. Residential real estate is a high growth, relatively low yield investment. So therefore, what you've got to do is grow your assets. And it takes the average investor, be realistic, takes the average investor 30 years to develop financial freedom. You can't buy planned properties in 10 years or 7 properties in 7 minutes like those emails you and I get in our inbox. You actually do have to save. You can't bypass the banks. You can't. There's always people who are going to try and sell you a get-rich-quick scheme. If it sounds too good to be true, avoid it. And then once you've built a big enough asset base, you can then get a cash machine. But in my mind, you need more than property today to live off your property portfolio. You either need such a large portfolio to have enough cash flow, or you probably need a house with no debt together with an investment portfolio with a level of debt against it, and then also some maybe managed funds or shares.
Oh, that's good. And I think another key that I got out of this conversation is get your finances ready, because there could be some opportunities that's coming up. But the ones that can capitalize on this opportunity is someone who's prepared. You know, getting yourself, whether it's getting your savings up, getting your equity released so that you're ready to go, getting your next pre-approvals. We don't know when the bottom is going to be, but it doesn't hurt to be ready so that when the opportunity comes, as Michael mentioned earlier, right, then you're ready to pull the trigger.
Moving away from our property a little bit, just some fun stuff here.
Fun part.
Aliens, believer or not?
Good question. I believe there's life out there somewhere. I don't think they've come to Earth yet. Maybe they have. Maybe they've dropped COVID on us. Yeah, I think there's life out there.
Right. And do you think they are equally obsessed with property like we are, if there is?
Something I've never thought about. But fear and greed are human emotions, so they're probably alien emotions as well.
Right. COVID, do you think it's a bioweapon that has been created and it's a planned game, or it's just another virus?
Well, I have a quite number of friends who are conspiracy theorists, and they had convinced me that it was. Having said that, one of the podcasts I listen to is Dr. Karl Krasinovsky, who has a science podcast, a really great podcast on SBS Radio, Triple J Radio. And he told me it isn't. And if Dr. Carl said it wasn't a bioweapon, it was normal, I trust Dr. Carl.
Okay, Carl is right. Okay. Yes. UBI, Universal Basic Income, will Australia see it where everyone just gets money in their account every month, like what they're doing in America at this point?
I'm very impressed that our capitalistic right-wing government has actually become a socialist government over the last couple of weeks and now giving people money. Isn't that interesting? And one of the other interesting things that's come out of this last month is that no one's complaining about it. We're all in it together and we're recognising that that's necessary to build this bridge to get through. But no, what the government's doing it differently. What they're doing is paying the employers to keep the staff rather than paying the staff directly.
Right. But do you see that changing to the point where we will actually just get a monthly, minimum monthly income, irrespective of whether
you are?
Nope. Okay.
No.
Right. That's fair enough. Do you think we are in a simulation that we are being played, like a video game?
You've been watching The Matrix, haven't you?
I would love to. I haven't yet.
The answer is I believe we have a future and I believe we are determining our future. I believe the actions I'm taking today determine what I'm doing tomorrow. I believe even more so, my thoughts lead to my feelings lead to my actions lead to my results. So my inner world creates my outer world. And even if that's not true, I perform better because I believe it's true.
Fair enough. That's a good way to put it. So, Michael, the way I'll end this is basically if you are in Australia, to our Australian listeners, the one asset class that you need to own still in this volatile market, whether it's volatile or not, whether there's a future growth or not, is still property, because we've seen what happens to the stock market. At least property hasn't suffered so far. That doesn't mean it cannot, but it still, mm-hmm. in the long run, will do its job, is what you're saying. So thanks for being on the show. Appreciate your time.
My pleasure.
And
the, if I could just finish by saying the reason why it won't drop is 70% of properties are owned by owner-occupiers who aren't going to sell up. They'd rather eat dog food than sell up their homes.
Yep.
So the property market will slump, but it won't crash.
But so you don't think that we'll see a 30 to 40% drop in the capital cities' prime locations?
No.
Cool. Fair enough. I appreciate your time, Michael. Thanks for being on the show. And to our listeners, hope you guys are enjoying the content. If you are, please don't forget to give us a 5-star rating on iTunes or whatever app you're using and let the word spread like a fire. Spark your fire. Cheers, Jazz and David. Bye.
If you have any questions or feedback about today's episode, you can reach out to us through sparkyourfirepodcast@gmail.com. That's sparkyourfirepodcast, all one word, @gmail.com. Also, the content discussed in this episode is general in nature. Please seek specific advice from qualified professionals in regards to your personal situation.